And hello, good afternoon. This is Mary Hartnett with The Exchange here on Siouxland Public Media. Well, today we are going to be talking about some topics that have been really important around Sioux City in the last month. And we're going to talk about some of the issues that have been happening with homelessness, with the law enforcement center. You may have seen some of the news items. You may have seen some of the meetings where people have come up to talk about them. So we're going to talk about those today with three guests. And Trish Ettringer, you are the Director of Operations for the Great Plains Action Society.
That is correct.
Now, what do you guys do?
So we basically kind of challenge, colonial institutions, concepts, and ideologies. And so that means that we kind of confront, challenging indigenous issues that happen within Indian country.
Okay. Yeah. And you were just across the way at a table at Western Iowa Tech, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So we'll be there until 2 p.m. today.
All right. All right. Great. So you're taking a break.
And yes.
That's good. You're joining us. Also, Calvin Harlan, you're the acting deputy chief of tribal operations for the Omaha tribe.
Deputy chief.
You're many other things as well.
Yes. I'm also the tribal employment rights director, tribal historical preservation oversight, and the development for our new tax program. So I have a hand in that as well.
You're busy. And Will Meyer, I remember seeing you at the city council on the 2nd of August talking about what was going on with homelessness in town.
Yeah. I also volunteer. I'm one of the board members with Native Youth Standing Strong.
And right, yeah.
Yeah, so that's part of my involvement.
That's also been going on for a while, right?
Over 10 years.
So yeah, I saw an article on it in like 2011. So
yeah.
I had no idea. So it's been pretty valuable, I have to imagine.
I think it has. That's what people tell us.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Well, today I wanted to talk about what happened about a month ago at City Hall. And we had, maybe 30 or more people that were at the city council meeting talking about the homelessness policy, and people were moved off of an encampment. They're saying an encampment, I'm not sure what you call it, downtown. And there was a real incident about how those people were told to leave, how their things were taken. I just kind of wanted to go around and talk to you guys. Maybe I'll start with Calvin. I talked to you there in front of the city building. Mm-hmm. And talk a little bit about what happened when that occurred.
I think I'm going to divert that over to Will.
Okay.
Because Will was actually on scene when this took place. So take it away, Will.
Okay. Thank you, Calvin. Yeah. So basically that morning, it was a Friday morning, and I was driving to work, and I could see some homeless people were up folding their clothes on the corner of Wesley Way and 4th Street. So it's not uncommon to see people there, but they were folding their clothes. They were distraught. There was, there was a lot of commotion and things going on, and it was clear they weren't happy, to say the least. And I kind of go around the corner, and I can see quite a few city workers down below moving around. I've seen a few of our Sioux City police officers kind of overseeing it. It was an ugly scene, and I don't think I'm describing it very well, but I've since have had workers with the city, with Department of Transportation, tell me it's pretty traumatic for them also. So I would say it's a pretty traumatic event. So I go around, I'm upset, I'm loud, I'm confronting people, other people are upset. And what's going on is basically they're throwing away, all of the stuff underneath the bridge. And there's two tunnels that go under there, basically. One's a bike path and then one's up from there. And so, everybody was upset. And so they're saying, you got to leave. And they say, hey, we gave them notice. And I was where's the notice at? And they said, well, it was up there. They removed it. I go, did you see them remove it? And they go, well, we didn't see them remove it. I go, well, I'm sure somebody removed it, but I don't think it was these guys because they wouldn't be there. One guy starts yelling, hey, my ID was in there, but it's already thrown away. And they're kind of remembering things they left. So basically, these guys grab an armful, the homeless people grab an armful of stuff, and they go up top. And they grab everything they can, they go up top, they start throwing away everything else. And it was just a difficult situation. So one of the officers were being good, and they go, hey, here's a whole list of services. But none of those services apply to that situation at that moment. And I go, where do they go now? And wherever they go, it's illegal. The warming shelter is closed down because in the summer they can live outside,
right.
But they can't legally live outside. And so anyway, so they go, well, they'll have to find someplace. You got to be able to pass a breathalyzer to go into the gospel mission. Really, nobody wants them. So what the policy is then when the police and city and everybody leaves, then they go back under the same bridge. Or they go to the next bridge, and we carried their stuff a half a block away to the next bridge. And so why throw their stuff away if they're just going back under it? So the policy, kind of my thing was, I know I could have done better, but I think that the thing is, can't we all do better than this? And that's where it started, and I had shared it with these guys and with a group that we're associated with, and everybody says, let's do something to bring it to people's attention. This has quietly, I would say quietly, been going on for years.
Mm-hmm. Trisha, I know you talked about what people felt were kind of degrading attitudes towards them when the police, I don't know if it was the police or other people with the city, moved them off. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so we have a Native American advisory board that works with the police, so when we address this to the police say, oh, well, that's not necessarily us. That's the city council because they make these policies. So in turn, then we have to address that to the city council. But then the city council tells us, oh, there's no funding. We can't, there's no specific funding for that. And then it runs into now present day, we have $15.6 million of COVID funding that's going into a jail system. And really, that could be going back to the community and creating resources. And I know there's stipulations. I know there's, things like that. But also there's kind of challenges with that, too, as well, because that's federal funding. So if you're going to accept that, then you have to it kind of triggers different things, too, as well on the federal level. So in a way, it's like, well, we always get the answer that we're trying to throw funding at it and this and that. And just it turns into a big runaround and people get frustrated because it's just something simple as, we need affordable housing. We need incentives for landlords to want to have Section 8 to revamp, run down buildings. And here we are. And, this has been an ongoing conversation. This has always been an ongoing crisis. And it's just not getting any better. So we're at this point where we're trying to come together and come up with proactive solutions. That's kind of where it's, I understand that everybody's frustrated and emotions are really high. But at the same time, like, we have to be level-headed and we have to start having those conversations and really coming up with proactive solutions because it's just not going to solve itself.
I have to completely agree with that. A lot of those people that are out there on the street right now are probably my relatives, my family, from the reservation. And I can honestly say that because I know some of those people that are out there. Excuse me. But all in all, these are situations right here that are real distasteful to talk about from our government, our local government, city government. It's like Trish was saying regarding this undertaking over there. If it's federal dollars, the lead undertaking federal agency or the agency that's in charge should be consulting with the tribes. This was native land before Western expansion. We've had many different tribes travel through here, migratory routes, things like that. And so those tribes should have been consulted. It's egregious that these rules are not followed in a situation like this. I don't know the whole story, but I can call the state. But the thing is when we look at this, you know, I think Trish is right on another point. Is this actually addressing our homeless issues, our human issues, our social issues, to put $15 million into a facility that's going to incarcerate not only the native population, but a population across the board? How is that helping our people? I fail to see the reasoning in that. I understand that we need incarceration. I understand that. I get that. But the point is that at this point in time, when we have COVID ravaging our populations, we should be throwing everything at the health system. We should be trying to get our people stabilized. Granted, there's probably some out there that don't understand that don't get that may be so caught up in their addictions that they're not able to address that. So when we look at that, we can provide that service. It's the same with us on the reservations. We're trying our best to take care of our people. I'm in the thick of things down there, whether I want to be or not. So I see the moves that we are trying to make for the health and well-being of our people. And when we say health and well-being, we also say preservation and protection of our culture. That's what we're doing. And so I agree with this. I think I have to get more involved with this jail situation.
I think something to include in there too, at the very least we need Native people at the table. It seems like these decisions are affecting Native people at a much greater disproportionate rate than any other culture. When we look at who's incarcerated, who's in the jail, who's in our juvenile detention, who's having police contact, you know, it's seeming, I mean, I know it's an anecdotal figure, but it seems almost, maybe 50% at a much, much higher rate. The census says it's 4% Native people here in Sioux City, which we know it's much higher than that. With the transition and stuff, it's hard to figure that out. But we at least need Native people and that considered when they're making decisions like this.
You know, I'm going to go to just a short piece here about some people speaking at the meeting and also outside. So I guess we'll play that.
About 60 people protested the treatment of homeless people removed over the weekend from a camp near 4th Street and Wesley Way. Outside of the municipal building, they carried signs saying, "Sioux City has to do better and you cannot displace War Eagle's people." Event organizer and tribal historical preservation officer for the Omaha tribe, Calvin Harlan, said there's no excuse for how these homeless people were treated.
Let's move them. Let's destroy their belongings. Believe it or not, these homeless people are people, and they have feelings and thoughts. We cannot be a party to allowing the city to continue to do that.
Winnebago Reservation resident Terry Medina told the council that the people in the homeless camp were treated with disrespect and disdain.
Instead of trying to move our homeless out of sight and out of mind, regardless of what color, and cover them up, why don't we reach down and help them up by showing compassion, sensitivity, and treating them with dignity and respect?
Sioux City resident Josiah Flowers went further.
How would you guys feel if you guys had 10 minutes to pick up everything in your guys' house and leave? That's not right, is it? It's just basic human traits that we have as people. We ask to be treated as human beings just as you guys are.
Mayor Bob Scott said he regretted how the removal of the camp was handled, but wants to change how city workers treat homeless people from this day forward.
What's done is done, and what happens going forward hopefully it'll be more positive than what it was.
Scott asked those at the meeting to provide contact information so the city could start a dialogue with local tribal leaders about the homeless situation.
And support for the exchange today comes from Gregory Giles, Investment Advisor Representative with Legacy Financial LLC in Sioux City. Serving the financial planning and advisory service or advisory needs of clients since 2004. Information about Legacy Financial and Greg Giles is available at legacyfinancialllc.com. Financial planning and advisory services offered through RDA Financial Network. Support also comes from sustaining members like Barbara and Rick Rubido of Sheldon. We'll return now to The Exchange.
And you are listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett, and we are today talking about what's going on in the community, both with what's going on with a new law enforcement center, what's going on with dealing with the homeless problem, and several homeless people were moved off at the beginning of the month at a place downtown. There's a lot of concern about how that was done with the police. I'm here and I'm talking with Tris Ettringer. She's Director of Operations for the Great Plains Action Society. Calvin Harlan, Acting Deputy Chief of Tribal Operations for the Omaha Tribe of Nebraska. And Will Meyer, he is in charge of Native Youth Standing Strong, among other things, a program designed by members of the Native community to teach Native arts, crafts, and spirituality, right? And you also spend time working. You work with young people who need a little guidance, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Mm-hmm. You're busy.
Yeah, as far as Native Youth Standing Strong goes, that program started. A few elders, Native elders, came to me and they said, "Hey, we know you work with juveniles in the system." Actually, they didn't word it quite that nice. It was, "Hey, we know you have our kids upstairs locked up, and we think that, the solution is already in place, and that's through culture and spirituality." And what they explained to me, you can't separate Native culture and spirituality. It goes hand in hand, and it goes hand in hand with prevention. And they go, if you start doing some of these things, you're going to see some results. And when that was Chris Denny, Rob Knuth, and another gentleman who first approached us, and they were not happy when they first did this. And so out of that, we've tried different things, talking circles, we've traveled, these kids have quarried pipestone, sweats, the Inipe ceremony, and have just been involved with different culture and around this area. And Calvin's been helping for years with that also, and now we're lucky enough and blessed to have Trish in the community, have some really neat things going on with it.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really, I think you guys are really, making yourselves known and making a difference. So I think that is really wonderful.
Thank you.
I've noticed not just in that area where they were taking out the homeless people down there, I've noticed also people being told to move on, like, on Hamilton Boulevard, that corner there where they've got the pizza place and the little mini mall thing. I see so much, because I get pizza for my daughter a lot there. There's often people there from all walks of life, and they're asking for money. And I've seen sometimes they almost get hit by cars. It's become a real issue. I mean, Trish, what can we do? It seems like there's a real disconnect between really the city and the people who need a place to live, and really the residents.
Right. So that, like I said, it comes down to the funding part of it. We even proposed the idea of having the one of the older buildings, or like an old hotel over by Baumgar's warehouse. And even in that, it was shut down immediately. "Oh no, we can't do that, because that foundation, we can invest in it, but it's not gonna, it's not worth it." Well, maybe we need to start looking back at that and looking at those statements. "No, we can't do this, we can't do that." I don't like that word, "we can't." That's just not in my vocabulary. So I think, the city council, they try to do as much as they can, but again, we have to keep looking and keep going back to these conversations and saying, okay, this is what we need to do. We need to start, making a list, going through these obstacles, making this, making goals that are tangible. Another thing too is it would be really, really great to have Native American representation. I know that there is an inclusive committee. However, it's still we're still, you know, I try my best to sit at that table and have those conversations, but we're still lacking that representation, and it's so needed. You know, I just was at the board meeting last night talking about the graduation rates, you know, of our Native students, which are very low, but somehow last year it was in the 90 percentile. And, you know, it, like I said, it comes back to that COVID funding. And okay, so if this is data you're sharing, and it's saying that, oh, we did a really good job last year, so why, let's look at that, you know. So a lot of this is, it's just, you know, I want the city council to really, really acknowledge the land that they're on and the struggles, the obstacles, the barriers. But at the same time, like, we're smart. We have doctors, we have nurses, we have THPOs, we have, you know, lawyers. We're here. We haven't left. So they need to continue to reach out and make those relations, because that's our community. So they should be talking to us about that.
Calvin, what do you think? I mean, it does seem like that this is, they're trying to talk to each other, but nothing has really happened yet.
Well, I I have a number of opinions floating around in my head about that. We've established dialogue with Chief Mueller, and we meet with him on a bi-monthly basis, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. We have a group of people who've let's say, weathered the storm. And what I mean by that is they've gone through their own trials and tribulations and somehow or another found their way in life to where today they're giving back. We have a whole group, and there's two of them besides me in this room right now. And we've offered our assistance to Chief Mueller in regards to moving some of these people, going and talk to them, being the spokesperson. There's nothing like a minority meeting another minority and listening to what they have to say. When you have the colonial aspect of law enforcement coming at you, you're not going to listen. You're going to shut off. And these are normal human traits that happen to all of us. Mm. This is across the board. This isn't just with Native people. Mm-hmm. Natives are more untrusting because of the historical trauma, these kinds of things. I'm not going to get into that. But we've offered that assistance to Chief Mueller. We have yet to be taken up on that offer. Mm-hmm. We've offered phone numbers. Call me in the middle of the night. I'll get up. I don't sleep well anyway. I'm old and busted up, you know. And I say that with all due respect. I probably should have stayed off of them horses back in my day, you know. But the point is that I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to get up if somebody needs assistance. If law enforcement is having a tough time and they deem it non-dangerous or however they're going to deem it, being an old law enforcement officer myself, I know how that can work. But I also know that a little bit of understanding and another red, brown face in that situation de-escalates the situation. I know that. I've seen it. I've witnessed it. I've experienced it. Now, the second half of this is when we look at ARPA dollars and we go back to the law enforcement center, for us with the Omaha tribe, we were told by the ARPA funders that we could not build new structures. We could not build a new facility, but we can build on existing ones. In that city council, that particular city council meeting, I said, give us a building. Give us a building. We're resilient. We know how to do this. Again, following Trish's lead here, we have intelligent, educated, degreed people that can take this and run with it. We also have a template. Native people, there's such thing as the moccasin telegraph. We may not have an answer here, but I'll bet you Florida does. I bet you the Seminoles do. Mm-hmm. I bet you the Navajos have a model that we could use. I'll bet you the tribe. I just came back from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Some of the things they're doing are just amazing. The point is, they said, call us. We'll help you. Call us. We'll give you the assistance you need. We have that kind of a network that we could feed off of to make this facility work. The point is, those powers that be down there, number one, they have to take us seriously. They have to take us seriously. They have to have a little bit of that trust in us, because I'll tell you what, they're making that trust boundary bigger and bigger each time by them guys giving us this rhetoric and runaround.
You know, I'm going to play a little bit, a couple minutes from the Woodbury County Supervisors meeting. I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago. In this, we'll hear some comments from Woodbury County Supervisor Matthew Ong, who said he was being unfairly accused of insensitivity to the needs of Native Americans and people of color, and a lot of people had something to say about that.
Crimes are committed by individuals. I'm a second-generation immigrant. My father is Chinese and escaped Laos. Given the fact that's the strongest part of my ancestry, if I told you I'm a person of color, you'd have no right to say otherwise. My wife is 100% Honduran. In my formative years, I spent a lot of time with the Supiak tribe in Nanwalik, Alaska, and the Havasupai tribe at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. None of that matters if I go and rob a liquor store. If I commit a crime, I do it as Matthew Ong, not as a BIPOC community member.
Ong's words did not go over so well with some of those present at the meeting. Manet Flamir rebuked Ong for his attitude towards those present who had concerns about the use of ARPA funds. Flamir is the son of the late Winnebago Tribe Native American activist Frank Flamir.
I find the presentation that you gave very disrespectful, uncouth, and patronized everybody here. I have some concerns about our approach, and I hope that his presentation doesn't speak for you other men. And I hope that you guys can counsel him a little bit on how to talk to the constituents here. I believe that what transpired can create social disruptions. The people are going to fight over 5 million. That might be crumbs to you. Maybe down the road you might throw us a bone, and the people are going to have to fight over that.
Ernie Colt also attended the meeting and pointed out that the county engaged with the community and unions on the $50 million bond issue for the jail, but not on the decision to use the ARPA money.
We were promised this was going to help our community. Lots of broken promises. Lots of broken promises. When it comes right down to it, it's all about the money, not about our community. That $50.3 million bond referendum that was voted on, yeah, we had meetings on that. Good job, Keith, getting everybody's input. Did we have those same meetings on the $15.5 million of COVID relief money?
Another speaker, Sunrose Ironshell of the Lakota Tribe, said she was concerned about the land the LEC is being built on.
As a Native American, Indigenous, Sioux woman, I'm very concerned with our culture being lost within all the construction sites. It is common practice that for every construction site, there needs to be a surveyor so that if any cultural items are found, that the tribes will be notified and the museum will be notified, and that we can save that and rescue that as a part of our own not only Native American legacy, but American legacy as a Sioux City as well.
When the hearing was concluded, Matthew Ong wrapped it up and said nothing much has changed his mind after 45 minutes of testimony.
And that was from a recent Woodbury County Supervisors meeting. A lot of people, they're upset about spending $15 million plus to try and deal with the ever-rising costs of the law enforcement center being built kind of off of 28th. I see it every day. I'm driving down from North Middle. And that cost, because of a lot of reasons, keeps going up. And I really wanted to play that because that evening, I really felt that the comments made by Matthew Ong really did affect a lot of people there. Calvin, go ahead.
That's the typical attitude that a unenlightened, uneducated person will have. That's typical. I think those of us in this room have encountered that countless and countless and countless times. And it's sad because I think my nephew Manapi hit the nail right on the head, because this is how it masks his own fear. Just because he was in the Grand Canyon doesn't make him sensitive to Native issues and needs. You know, and it takes a certain amount of understanding, but you've got to have that understanding as well, you know. At the end of the day, after 45 minutes, his opinion wasn't necessarily changed. Well, what about the rest of them? Because he's only one man.
Who is also voted into that public elected position. So he should be reminded of that, mm-hmm. that it's the people that truly have the power. So if he treats his constituents that way, they can also take that power away from him. And to kind of add on to that, just because you've been in the Grand Canyon doesn't make you, you know, you have to really understand and put that lens on. Just because you were second, you know, generation immigrant, do you truly understand what that means? You know, I was adopted by a German, you know, immigrant who, you know, my adoptive dad was an electrician at John Deere, but you don't see me out here. You know, I understand and I live every day as an Indigenous woman. And, you know, some of the things that he said, you know, I wasn't there last week to defend myself. And for him to call out an Indigenous woman and say that what she has to say is ignorant, I have no words for that. That's just disrespectful. It's distasteful. And again, I just would like to remind him that he is publicly an elected official. So he should be more wise about what he chooses to say, because that can be taken away from him.
Will Meyer, go ahead.
Well, it's interesting, the ego that goes into having to say that. I mean, it's only offensive. And I think both these guys make great points. One, yeah, he needs an education, but you have to want it first. An education and not necessarily talking about school, but talking about culture and the people in our community. And so often the Native community is almost an afterthought. And you know what? And if people come here, that makes me mad. He's upset. The people are there. And having to to go through all of that and to say that, why do that? And I think that, and Trish says something also, Native people are still here. We know the Native population's growing. And a lot of the other cultures, the population's declining. This is going to keep going. This isn't going away. So for people that, hey, I'm tired of hearing about this, I don't want to hear about it, that's too bad. And we see in other cities, we look at Rapid City, where they at least use the Native community for tourism and for things like that. And it seems like in Sioux City, isn't that ironic? And we don't even take advantage of the tourism opportunity. I've been in the Badlands and seen a bus from Germany. People are interested, and some of that goes back to the education. How about our schools' education? We teach Native history in our schools. I don't know if people know this. In the little bit I understand about it, but it's Cherokee history. It's other tribes. And our tribes around here, the history is so interesting. And we don't teach that history. So from the time people, non-Native people, are very young here, we're being taught to, hey, ignore, look. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to look at the Native culture. I don't want to learn. We're not part of it. We don't value that culture. And until we do that, things aren't going to get better. And I would say, to a certain degree, we were talking about the police chief and the homelessness. Some of these things, there has been progress, but it's not good enough. It's not good enough. Good is the evil of great. We could be doing so much more, but until we embrace the Native community and really want them at the table with us, things aren't going to get better.
Some people who were at the original city council meeting, and I don't know if it was you, Trish, mentioned this whole boarding school to prison pipeline, and there's a huge project up at the University of Minnesota, right, about this. And it's just something that I think that sort of pulls together all these issues, the homelessness, the new jail,
right? It's all layered, all of it's layered. So again, you know, you can be, you can have all these master degrees, you can have all these things, but again, you're missing it. You're missing the whole entire point. If you cannot relate to the Native community and understand that history and why, you know, why we are the way that we are, we're resilient, we're still here, we're strong, we're smart, we're beautiful, and that's your misfortune. You're missing out. There's so many layers, so many layers to that, and you know, boarding schools, we knew that the children are there. They've always been there. But the recent uncovering or unearthing of the children, it's still fresh and it still stings. And then that does, you know, we have boarding school survivors, you know, from U.S. government policy, that's affected living generations today. And so now you see how it trickles down, and now we see some of the substance abuse, the homelessness, because our people have been traumatized from that, and they weren't given the resources that they desperately needed, and so it's kind of like, you know, the city council or, you know, just the government itself is looking at us and saying, well, why are you homeless? Why are you this? If you look back at it, you're going to find the answer. And it's not just because we just decided to wake up one day and get hooked on, you know, alcohol or meth or anything like that. No, I don't think anybody wakes up with that intention. But you're basically pointing a finger at us and blaming us for what you did to us. And now our youth is realizing that, and it's powerful because they understand now. And so it's like they're healing the ones that, you know, have been traumatized. But at the same time, we go through that too as well. So it's just we need city council. We need, you know, members of our society to really recognize and really get that history, the real history, not the whitewashed history, the real history. There's tribal nations not that far away. And if you still don't know the history, that's on you. That's your part. That's your job. That's your obligation. You know, as a public elected official, that's your job.
Calvin.
Yeah, I really like that. The comments that Trish just made here, because that speaks to who we are as individuals. When you look at the words of Colonel or General Pratt from Carlisle Indian School, he said, kill the Indian, save the man. Now, they've succeeded in one thing, is that they've taken away our identity as individuals. This saying about boarding school to prison was never truer. Here's the thing, is that when you push a different culture down somebody's throat, it causes confusion, it causes chaos. For us, it caused almost loss of identity. And when I say this, I speak from my heart, because that's what happened to me. 17 years old, I joined the United States Air Force because my stepfather felt that was the direction I needed to go. I needed to have a place to lay my head. I needed to have three squares. I needed to have a little change in my pocket. And I had a job. Now, what does that sound like to you? If that's not boarding school mentality, if that's not colonialism, I was a product of that. So the 80s for me were a blur. And the reason is I had a good job, but I also had an addiction. I had a disease, I had an illness. Before that, I grew up speaking my language before I spoke English. And so when I turned 28 years old and had a body of a 60-year-old man because I damaged myself, I had to find a way to live. And so I had to come back to who I was, my identity as an Omaha man, as somebody who's a teacher, who's a father, who's a grandfather. And so when we look at these things, It's about understanding. It's about learning who we are, because you know what? We are not mainstream. We're a whole different ball game here as Native Americans. And so if you're going to talk about us, respect us enough to accept that. And let's not be so narrow-minded and not understanding and have a lack of understanding because you spent time down there at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. That doesn't amount to anything. And I'll be the first to tell him that. The point to this now is that we are resilient. We come from a whole different mindset. We come from a mindset of culture, of language, of values, and of respect for ourselves, our families, and others. I often wonder in my mind here as I sit here, what would be the differences if the city council and the county commissioners were made up of Native American people? I can guarantee you we would have services for our people. I can guarantee you, based off of the Western education and the common sense that Native Americans have, and you put that together, you have an explosive, dynamic piece there that can help our people. Mm-hmm. We're not just a statistic at the end of the day. We have hearts. We're people. The problem here is that these people here, just because we're a different shade of color, it's like Standing Bear said, our blood is still red. Just because we may suffer from these addictions over the loss of our identity doesn't mean that we can't be saved. Let's look at this from the Christian perspective and say, you're a human being. What can we do to help you? Mm-hmm. Instead of looking at it like, oh, you're just a number, you know, forgive me.
No, that's okay. I just, I wanted to get to this piece by Sheila Brummer about this summer, the Omaha Tribe of Nebraska held an outreach event for young people on the reservation. Part of this included art. Mm-hmm. And Siouxland Public Media, Sheila Brummer paints the picture of this creative cultural history lesson.
Can I start?
Sure.
More than a dozen youngsters with brushes in hand. I'll bring a mural to life, including 15-year-old Traylon Sheridan of Rosalie, Nebraska. She and others worked to cover a wall once gilded with graffiti.
It looks like 6, 7, 8 buffaloes.
Traylon and the enthusiastic group rely on guidance from Paul Chelstad, an artist from Sioux City.
Grab a brush that you think could work for you.
Chelstad crafted the outline of the powerful animals and other elements of the design.
Some of them are just buffalo color, and the other are for the four colors of the directions of the earth, yellow, red, blue, and green.
The buffalo is our spiritual animal.
Traylon Sheridan, who is a member of the Omaha tribe, spent 3 days attending a cultural camp at the powwow grounds in Macy, Nebraska.
Everything was about respect. Everybody sat still and they listened.
Mixing the mural with motivational lessons on history, language, including traditional songs from tribal elders. Here, young tribal members immerse themselves not only in paint, but hands-on learning, led by a core group of local leaders who organize the event and share their knowledge to a new generation.
My name is Dwight Howe. I'm a cultural guidance counselor for a suicide prevention substance abuse program with the Omaha Tribe of Nebraska.
Tell me the significance of this mural.
The mural, the concept is the four hills of life. There's the infant, the child, the adult, the elder. I would consider you being on maybe your third hill in life. Paul and I, we're on our fourth hill. We look back on that hill and look back, and people are gone. Our mothers, our fathers. We can't say grandpa, grandma. Some of us can't say son. They died before us. That fourth hill is sacred. Child, infant, child, adult, elder. The four hills of life. And we talk about that in our songs. We also talk about the Nishude, the river. Nishude. Omahas were here 500 years ago. And they came here and they saw that river, and on it was all this fog. Sometimes it's like that even today. It'll be up clear up on the hills, and along the river it'll be all fog. They said it's smoky. Shoot day. Knee, water. So that's what our language is descriptive. So they called it Knee Shoot Day. 500 years we've had a relationship with that water. People have come up, and Lewis and Clark came up and seen us. The French, the Spanish before them, came up it to visit us. We met all kinds of people through that river. Sometimes it's been good, and sometimes it's been bad. But nonetheless, we're here. We survived. We're still here. And the buffalo, they used to be sacred to us. They still are. God gave us that buffalo. That lead one, they say, Tenuga Baji, Bagaji. That's that lead buffalo. There's a storm we're going to paint in there, and he's going to lead them right through it. He's our leader, Tenuga Baji. That's like our children. That's like us.
Dwight Howe's philosophy is colored with rich historical perspective as he tries to address one of the issues facing the Macy community.
There's people spraying graffiti. So now, perhaps, our hope is the kids take ownership of this. We painted that. Don't mess it up so that graffiti might go somewhere else or go away. Because we don't want that in our community. We're just like any other community. We want to keep our environment clean. We want to keep our neighborhood clean. We want good things just like everyone else. I say if we look long enough and hard enough, we'll see that we're more alike than we are different. Same God made you, made me. Ede Wonge, we're all related. And that's what we teach our children. So the singing, the teepee, the medicine pouches, the sewing of dresses, the hand game, the archery, the horses that aren't here yet, they're all part of that, sending them a message that you're of value. I'd rather try to focus on the positive rather than accentuate the negative. Mm-hmm. But we're like any other community with socioeconomic conditions. You could take those same variables and take them to Denver, take them to San Francisco, take them to Boston, and you'll have the same problems. It's not uniquely inherent for the Omahas to have social problems. But there's alcohol and drugs, and we're against that. We stand against that firmly. But we want to work with the community. We want to work with people like Paul, 73-year-old elder, who's lived all his life in Sioux City, has never been to Macy. It's 40 minutes away.
So earlier the younger kids did the river, and that was a lot of, like 30 kids painting at one time. It was a riot.
Paul Chelstad helps the young artists complete a scene of water, multicolored buffalo, and a traditional Omaha medicine wheel, and those four rolling hills of life.
Okay, good job, thank you.
Traylon Sheridan and her friends use this art activity as a way to draw on history.
Maybe someone will catch their eye on them and ask what it means.
With pride for the future.
I feel like today people forget what our tribe means.
What does your tribe mean to you?
I think our tribe just brings peace.
And Dwight Howe wants the children of the tribe to know they matter as he strives to promote the Omaha tribe's culture, their ways, their community.
We're an extended family. Ede Wonge, we put them in their different clans so they can physically see where they come from. But they're all of a bigger one, the tribe.
A tribe of tradition working together to improve the future, one brush stroke at a time. In Macy, Nebraska, Sheila Brummer, Siouxland Public Media News.
And thank you so much, Sheila. Dwight Howe says the new mural was a focal point during the Omaha tribe's recent powwow in Macy. And now, Calvin, you mentioned the number of kids that took part in this. It was quite a few.
Yes, yes. The first day we had 130 plus. The next day we had 160 some. And the day after we had 176. In my position, I was able to pull the programs together and to provide meals. We were very, very surprised that this many of our young people came out to be a part of. And the thing about this is, what I take away from this is when we talked about the culture, we had two elders get up and talk in their 80s. And the kids, the young people listened. That's the thing, is they listened. They were interested. And I think that showed us that there was a focal point here where we're starting to go back in terms of linear versus circular. Our young people are starting to come back and find culture interesting. And so when we look at that, we look at our school systems, we look at our elders, our ceremonies that are still taking place, and we're finding that the medicine is there. I did a talk not long ago regarding some of my family that came to the Sweat Lodge, and I talked about how it was medicine. And so when we see it and look at it from that cultural perspective, then it has a whole lot more meaning. It's more impactful. And these were part of our norms historically. This is how we lived. We weren't going to go out and break the rules because we knew there were circumstances. So we're slowly coming back. And this was classic. And I know that there's more to come. And like I was just telling Will, I'm getting old. I don't know how much longer I can do. But all praise to Dwight Howe. I mean, he fostered this idea and took off with it. And it was fantastic. Thank you to everybody that was there, you know.
And I want to thank you, Calvin Harlan, for coming in today, Acting Deputy Chief of Tribal Operations for the Omaha Tribe. Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. And Will Meyer, are you still a Sioux City Probation Officer?
Yes, I am.
And you also run the group, the Native Youth Standing Strong group.
I'm one of the
you're
people
of them.
Involved. Yeah, yeah. I would say right, but one of the people. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And also Trish Ettringer, the Director of Operations for the Great Plains Action Society. And thank you so much for coming. I saw you at all these meetings. Actually, I saw all you guys. So I knew you'd be full of information. We'll have to revisit this another time. Thanks so much to our guests, and thanks also to Steve Smith. I'm Mary Hartnett. That's it for this edition of The Exchange. We'll see you next week.